Welcome to Doom Speak, Episode 51, Doom 2099, Issues 32 and 33. Welcome back to Doom Speak, the ongoing chronicle of the fantabulous exploits of the world's leading leader, the rightful ruler of Latveria and the United States, himself, Dr. Doom. And in this episode, we are continuing our futuro-historical examination into how exactly Dr. Doom is dealing with his new responsibilities in turning these here United States into one nation under Doom. But first, a little feedback. And we need to start by dealing with Billy D's disappointment. Hey, Prof, excellent episode. But boy, do you know how to deflate a guy's excitement. Your announcement that you won't be getting back to Astonishing Tales for a while made me sad. I do look forward to more Doom 2099, though, so there is that. Well, Billy, I hope this episode scratches a bit of that itch for you. And I understand your feelings. I have been faced with this situation before, as I have been disappointing people since 1965. I missed a brief note from earlier over the summer from our court physician, Sir Dr. Ange, catching up on podcasts and loving Doomspeak. And Doomspeak loves you, Doc. He also wrote in on the last episode as well, and I sure hope he's less bummed out than Billy is. Thanks for another great review. Well, Doc, that's a good start. I definitely had the reprint of the second part of this as a kid. Even then, I wondered how Latveria was such a pushover of a country that in just the time when Doom is away on vacation, the peasants end up all goose-stepping in armbands. Whoever controls the castle controls the country seems a little simplistic. I did like the hallucinogenic gas ending, as that was definitely mind-bending to young Ange reading the books. That version of Ange thought it much more reasonable in a comic book to have them actually being shrunk than to just believe they'd been shrunk. Also, I do think that I will let myself be influenced by Doom's fashion choices. Next time I'm in Monaco, I plan to sun myself by the poolside in full armor. Yes, and I think that whole who controls the castle thing, that rule does need a modern refresh. Also, I know that your specialty in medicine is pediatric emergency care. And I don't want to speak for my dermatologist, but having a skin cancer removed a few years back, I'm guessing that Dr. Sanfilippo would definitely approve of me sunning myself in full armor. On the social media post for the episode, I commented, spoilers, it doesn't end well for the Red Skull, to which Chris Lydon replied, spoilers, good. Ranger Gord, who stands on guard for thee, offered his doomgratulations for the appropriate renaming or re-victoring of this show, now Doomspeak. Hail Doom. And a hearty hail Doom to you, Gord. We all appreciate you maintaining your northern outpost. Sir Manuel from Truthful Comics and the Evandris Theory comic book had some interesting thoughts. I'm sure our benevolent monarch Victor Von Doom is pleased with your efforts to continue spreading the truth about his reign in the peaceful realm of Latveria. That aside, I look fondly upon a time when information traveled slower and life in general had a much calmer pace. It seems nowadays everything has to be digested immediately, and our lives have become chaotic and frenetic. I cling to those days. That's why, to this day, I still send handwritten letters to my friends, because to me, they feel more personal. Now, ask someone who has been on the receiving end of a handwritten note from Manuel. Let me say that it is indeed very impactful to receive a personal, thoughtful note. I am totally with you on that, Manuel, and you do it very well. He continues, "Sorry I went on this tangent, but this issue made me think of this when Doom was relaxing on vacation because information hadn't reached him yet of what was occurring in his homeland, like it would in this day and age. Ah, the good old days. Great job as always, Professor. Hail Doom." Wise words, Manuel, wise words, and a hearty Hail Doom to you and yours. What I love about getting feedback from y'all is that literature, art, comics, any creative effort has this amazing ability to impact us each individually based on where we are at a particular moment, where we have been all our life. Our reactions to art are so personal, so very individualistic. And I think it's great that that is what Manuel took from my discussion of that issue, that that is the lesson, the connection, the inference that he drew. That's just wonderful. And I know this is not where Manuel was going, but his comment confirmed to me why here at the network, both M and I are supporters of the concept of the myth of authorial intent. The idea that what the creator intends to communicate pales to insignificant compared to what the creator actually communicates to individual readers, like, in this case, Manuel. The author of that story was not writing on the theme of how social media and technology has depersonalized modern communications. But that's what Manuel got out of it, and that is what counts. I see a longer rabbit trail nearby, but I will resist that temptation and simply thank Manuel for his feedback. Social media support for that last episode came from the notorious JJG Jeremiah, Chris from Professor Frenzy, Derek from the History of Comics on Film, Sir Luke Check and Eddie Clinton from Coffee and Comics, Karen from Between the Pages, James from Karen, we are with you, Ruth and Darren Sutherland from the Rad Adventures Network, The Telltale Mind, I Was Joe, Vic in Phoenix, Ed from Teal Productions, Chris Willett, Robert Ludwig, the most sane man among us, Shane Kelly, Pat from the Longbox Crusade, and my good buddy Kirk Spencer, a.k.a. Big Five Army. Thank you all. Let's take a break here, play a promo, and when we return, we will find ourselves transported some 75 years into the future.
Who's editing? A thought experiment in which Siskoid and his guest appoint themselves editors of a comic book line at DC Comics. But the joke's on them, because they can only use the characters of a specific issue of Who's Who, and in fact must use them. Great ideas? Yes, we think so. Cool reinventions? Of course. Crisis fatigue? We guarantee it. Who's Editing? Now on its own feed, only at the Fire and Water Podcast Network, Apple Podcasts, and Spotify.
And we're back. Doom 2099, issues 32 and 33, were cover dated August and September 1995, respectively, and each had a cover price of $1.95. For synopses, we'll run these together and then do the analysis afterwards. Thanks to Doom2099.com for providing summaries that I used as jumping-off points for what follows. The cover of issue 32 by John Royal and Scott Koblish shows Doom face front, his fists clenched in front of his face, energy rising from that fist. It is a blue and red portrait against a stark black background. We have the One Nation Under Doom seal on both this cover and the next one. This one is solid if you're looking for a poster version of this version of Doom. The story, Rise, was written by Warren Ellis with art by John Royal and Scott Koblish. Even before starting, I already miss Pat Broderick. The first page actually gives us a nice bit of prose that brings us up to speed. Unfortunately, it is in a thin green font against a black background, so my eyes of a certain age are only 85% sure that I got all of what follows correct. By my interpretation, that opening page says, in the autumn of 2099, the Second American Revolution exploded. The fractured states of America, ruled by the U.S. megacorps, were a berserk, polluted danger to the entire planet. A rabid dog in pursuit of the profit motive. Just to interrupt here for a second, you know, as I'm reading this, I'm starting to think that Warren Ellis does not like the United States and its free market economic priorities. The intro continues. Doom, ruler of the European state of Latveria, was forced to the conclusion that in his continuing bid to save his home, he must first save America from itself. So he took over America, claiming the presidency by right of revolution. Doom has cowed the megacorps, forcing them to use their money to rebuild the country they have almost ruined. Because, just to interrupt again, sometimes, I guess, in Ellis's worldview, authoritarianism is good, if the authoritarian is on Ellis's side. Okay, back to the intro. There have been setbacks. A disastrous televised address while under the influence of hallucinogens has destroyed his image in the eyes of an already fearful American public, and Doom's callous destruction of the toxic blight called Hellrock and its ruler, Paul Philip Ravage, did not help. But Doom is in control. He has done good things. He is the president. Okay, the story portion of the issue starts in the American Midwest. The sun doesn't shine over Chicago. Tyler Stone arrives in this neutral city to attend a meeting of megacorp CEOs at the Reserve, where a Mr. Herod has called a meeting. Despite the meeting actually physically being in literal actual Chicago, it is conducted virtually, as each CEO occupies their own personal safe box for the duration of the telemeeting. To me, this represents quite a downgrade from the basic Zoom services. Nonetheless, for the duration of the meeting, no hostile action shall be taken, either of the economic or physical variety. This Herod dude is so 90s, certainly 1990s, but evidently also 2090s. He has a cybernetic eye and tattoos all over his body. And just in case you're wondering how I know that he has tattoos all over his body, it's because he's wearing a fancy blue and gold long coat over his, well, over his nothing. At least nothing above his waist, because that glorious coat is gloriously open over Herod's gloriously tattooed abs and chest. Oh my. The seven CEOs meet to discuss ruling America. They plan to take it back from doom. Oh my. In Latveria, things are going pretty darned well under the leadership of Fortune, head of the indigenous Zafiro clan. In the time doom's been gone, life has settled into a sweet, easy rhythm, unknown since the 19th century. Now, things are not going as well next door in Mikelistan, which was the victim of a vicious attack a few podcast episodes back. Because there, nobody is alive. Nothing is left alive. The necrotoxification eradicated everyone. Aboard the floating platform Libera Cielo above Doom's White House, Indigo wanders through cyberspace, and she finds something hidden in Chicago. It seems that the megacorps are working together to keep whatever it is, whatever they are doing, hidden. In the Oval Office, we learn that the public is turning to Captain America as a pure American icon. Doom reviews a popular recent biography of Cap and finds it filled with errors. Americans have no respect for history. Cap's supposed role in the language riots of the early 2000s especially annoys Doom. Back in the reserve, Herod makes an offer to the CEOs. And yes, his jacket is still open. In exchange for getting rid of Doom, Herod asks that he be allowed to rule America. The specific program that he proposes, he calls Capitalism in Action. I have an American dream. I want to bleed this nation dry, maybe even the world. I propose to take our corporate ethos to its natural extreme. Asset strip our planet and relocate to Mars. The end game of Herod's plan is a wondrous retirement in fine colonies built with Earth's blood. Even if we kill 75% of the population, we figure we're okay. Oh, and if the other CEOs don't agree, he'll, you know, kill them. And so they agree. And this scene could be a social media meme. How does Warren Ellis tell us he does not know much about economics without telling us he doesn't know much about economics? Again, it's almost as if he's not a fan of America and its commitment to free enterprise and capitalism. Back in Washington, Hart Blue discovers Wire's body, dead from what appears to be a self-inflicted wound. The name Zandra is written on the wall in his own blood. And on the last page, Indigo interrupts Doom's musings with news. It's California. Something's happened in California. Something terrible. To be continued. In issue 33, the cover of which is definitely a change of pace, this piece by Steve Pugh and Scott Koblish shows Captain America standing on a platform in some kind of body of water, and in the background, doing what he does best, looming, is the visage of our Latverian leader. In the big text on the left side of the cover, we read, "Lo, there shall come an avenger." This story, Fall, remember that issue 32, which we just discussed, was Rise. So Fall was written by Warren Ellis with art this time by Steve Pugh and Scott Koblish. We start in the communications suite of the Libera Cielo. We learn that the something terrible in California is a terrible earthquake. There's talk of a gamma explosion. Doom, cool and competent as a leader of a nation in crisis, dispatches rescue teams to the West Coast. The restitution fund will bear the cost. But news of the quake is interrupted by a transmission showing an Alchemax R&D vessel returning from the Arctic Circle with a mysterious cargo. You can see, what? No, yeah, I see it too, but I know the book, but this is just... Oh Lord, it's Captain America! Doom wants the news feed cut, for the good of the citizens, no doubt. But his people are unable to comply. Indigo dives into cyberspace, because in the 2099 world, that's how the internet works, to try and gain back control. To her surprise, access to cyberspace has also been blocked. At the same time, Cap 2099 makes a statement. He says that yes, it is embarrassing to have been frozen in ice again. But the last thing I remember is we were in a battle with a monster come from the depths of Europe, the enemy of our generation. The last Avengers Quinjet was hit by a beam weapon, exploded. I fell into the water. And with that, Doom had beaten us all. The American dream was over. And now they tell me he's president. Doom's reaction is to monologue about how that never actually happened, blah, blah, blah. But we can summarize his reaction in a modern two-word phrase. Fake news. Over the White House, we see the Libera Cielo ominously hovering over the White House. I say ominously because this message comes in from the platform. This is our last words from the comms suite. We've picked up 3 missiles of unknown origin, dropping their stealth field, targeting us. The Libero Cielo defense system has been disabled. We're dead. And then, in a full page splash, we see the platform explode and portions of the machinery and equipment crash into the White House. Back inside the Chicago Reserve, we learn that this is where secret technologies are stored. We also learn that Herod has released the first of these twisted sciences with the full backing of the corporate structure that Doom had cowed, including wave spiders, a life form grown for guerrilla war banned by the 2064 treaties, an air cavalry growing combat organs on their underbellies as they cross the Atlantic, salvaged from a time quake in 2081 banned by coalition agreement in 2049. We also see that Cap 2099 himself is listed as one of the many creatures released upon America by Herod. We cut to New York City for a page, where Spider-Man 2099 watches Doom's environmental platforms fall amidst the mountains and canyons of Manhattan. In other words, things are not going well for our beloved leader. I am Doom. My world is burning at the edges. My armor's onboard systems shiver with static. The nanoprocessors in my blood struggling to cope with a destruction field. He orders his staff to deploy all guards and arm themselves. Be strong. That is all. Indigo Blue reports in from California, but her transmission is interrupted by Herod, John Herod. He tells Doom that he should have killed the corporate heads when he took over, thoroughly dismantling them. That's where I was hiding. He tells Doom that he's actually handling this whole thing pretty well, which is why he, Herod, had to escalate. Doom watches a live broadcast feed and is shocked. Alien helicopters above my beloved Latveria. Who is this Herod? What are his connections? What is that liquid jetting from those copters? It is Doom's worst nightmare, that's what it is. Wave spiders releasing necrotoxins, just like the Americans released in McKellistan, which reduced the entire population to protein-rich sludge. And in two terrible dramatic pages, we see scenes of destruction falling from the sky onto both Doom's location in Washington and also destroying a once proud European land. They're killing my country, my beloved Latveria, so far away. And there is nothing I can do. The end. I'm just going to say wow for now. And mention first the quotes. This was a tradition instituted by John Francis Moore, and then continued by Warren Ellis to place a quote at the end of the story, which usually adds some context to what we've just read. Issue 32 ends with this famous quotation from William Butler Yeats. The blood dimmed tide is loosed, and everywhere the ceremony of innocence is drowned. The best lack all conviction, while the worst are full of passionate intensity. And 33 gives us this very appropriate quote from The Last Generation by James E. Flecker. I saw vast halls and palaces of men falling slowly, decaying, crumbling, destroyed by nothing but the rains and the touch of time. Now, I think it's always important to remember, as a connoisseur of comics and a fan of Doom, that though things look bad here at the end of issue 33, it's always important to remember that it's darkest just before the dawn. At least that's what I hope. And seeing as I last read these books about 3 decades ago, I really have no idea where this storyline wraps up. I did like the paired titles of these two issues, Rise and Fall, which certainly set the tone for each issue. The tones of the two issues were quite different, but that is not a problem, again, seeing as how well that tone change was signaled in those titles. It would be podcasting malpractice for me to not briefly touch on the name of these issues' antagonist, Herod. And not to get too darkness to light on y'all, but two men named Herod intersect with the story of Jesus in the New Testament. One, Herod the Great, is credited with receiving the 3 kings of Orient on their way to visit the newborn king, which led directly to the massacre of the innocents. That's the time frame in which Joseph receives a dream that directs his little family to flee to Egypt. 3 decades later, one of that Herod's sons, Herod Antipas, appears in the New Testament towards the other end of Jesus' life as the one involved in both Jesus's and prior John the Baptist's executions. And in that analysis, if this Herod is fulfilling a similar purpose, that would make Doom... Wait a minute. Is Ellis really going there? Time will tell, I suppose. One other name that needs to be noted in issue 32, when Captain America's biography is discussed, the name on the cover of that book, the author's name, is Jack King. Love that reference to Kirby. Very well done there. Also, this issue does demonstrate again how well the 2099 universe did with, I mean, this isn't really a crossover per se, though they did that about 20 issues beforehand, but just referencing each other, tying in events. It's based solely on that intro paragraph of issue 32. We learned that Doom dealt with Ravage between that issue and the one prior. We also have Miguel O'Hara here, and also the California earthquake that appears or that happens in issue 10 of Hulk 2099. And finally, I've already hinted at this. I will try to keep this part short. and kind of non-ranty. But first, let me emphasize, these are great issues, wonderful portrayals of a society in rise and fall. It is very, very well done. But the overall world that's been built, the corporate stuff, a lot of it just doesn't make sense. Of course, the economics of Star Trek doesn't make any sense either, but that's in a totally different way, with some magical hand-waving and lots of unanswered questions. Now, there's a lot to comment on here in this subject, but I will attempt to be brief and focused. Now, the main point of Herod's plan in terms of the CEO's cushy retirement is to, literally, kill their customers, possibly up to 75% of them. And they're going to destroy nations across the world, not just destroy the infrastructure so they can pay us to rebuild it. No, kill their customer base and their potential workforce. Nope, I don't buy it. It doesn't make sense. That's not how it works. That's the secret. That's the invisible hand of free market capitalism. Customers. Customers making free will decisions with their money, choosing from businesses who are competing with each other for that money. Customers are king. Now, on the positive side, Ellis does, unknowingly, I imagine, channel the thoughts of Adam Smith beautifully in one way. Because one of the great misunderstandings of free market capitalism is to think that the key is corporations or even entrepreneurs. One of Smith's great adages set forth coming up on 250 years ago and on the Wealth of Nations, and I will adapt it, modernize it. But one of the things he says, and this is capitalism's great promoter, Adam Smith, is that never do two business people meet together where they fail to conspire to raise prices. And this is actually the same point as above, I guess, that the key is competition. So this idea of the CEOs meeting, working together, agreeing to courses of action, in other words, choosing to not compete with each other, that is a bad, bad thing under any definition of capitalism, corporatism, free markets. Call it whatever you will. Even the most libertarian, small government, anti-regulation folk will likely agree that one thing that government needs to do is maintain an atmosphere of competition to make sure that, for example, Coke and Pepsi don't agree to conspire to limit supply, set prices, etc. That is illegal for very good reasons. Too many people, even pro-business people, quote-unquote, too many politicians for sure, view the economic situation as a battle between labor and ownership and feel like they need to take one of those two sides. All that while forgetting to take the side that I try to take, which is not pro-business or pro-labor, but it's pro-customer, pro-consumer. Okay, lecture over, rant over, although in my defense, that did not sound all that ranty. Also, I imagine that as long as Ellis keeps writing this title, I'll have opportunities to make sort of related points. But again, my personal qualms aside, these two issues as comic books, really good stuff here. Next up for Doomspeak, at least scheduled to be next up for Doomspeak, we podcasters need to be cautious when we make any promises about future episodes. But the plan is that sometime in February 2024, we will cover an issue of Blade number 2, from the 2005 run of that character's title. After that, we'll probably get back to this storyline, because we do seem to be heading for a conclusion, and I would really like to get to it. Kind of soon, if that's possible. If you have any feedback on this episode, either of these issues, the world of 2099, the economics of 2099, or anything related to our good doctor, the rightful ruler of Latveria, and at least for a little while longer, the ruler of the USA, don't hesitate to contact me. You can do that via email, relativelygeeky@gmail.com, or as a comment on the Facebook, X Twitter, or blog post for the episode. The blog is at relativelygeekypodcast.blogspot.com. As always, friends, thanks for listening. Take care. And hail doom.
Hail doom!